Welcome into another edition of the Dane and Victory podcast, only available on musketeerreport.com. I am Rick. He is Dan. And Dan, it's a big week here. This is a big one on Saturday.
It is. Way bigger game, way more high-profile game probably than you or I or anybody else would have thought when the game appeared on the schedule. But it's going to be a top-10 matchup in Waco on Saturday afternoon.
It certainly is. We're going to get into that, start breaking it down for you. But let's start with the Musketeers' win Tuesday night. They played North Dakota State, beat them 85-55. And also, since the last time we talked, they also beat Northern Iowa 64-42 on Saturday in just an extraordinary defensive performance. Dan, let's start here. Just the defense from this team. I think this is as far along as I've ever seen a Chris Mack team in terms of where they're at defensively this early in the season.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Their tendency toward trading buckets seems to have been drilled out of them. That was evident as recently as like the Missouri and Clemson games, but these last two games, and actually including the first Northern Iowa game, I'd say the last three games, they've really locked down defensively. And it seems like something that kind of it's like a momentum thing for them. The better they do, the more effort they seem to put in, and the better the dividends that come out of it. This is also a Xavier team that, as you and Snow and I and everybody else who's talked about them have noted since day one, is a team blessed with extraordinary size and length, particularly on the perimeter. And that has become more and more clear. And when you add to that the fact that two of the guys who are key players for Xavier, Blewett and McCura, who in the past have been, you know, average defenders at best, both really have reshaped their bodies and are showing a lot more athleticism and lateral quickness this year. And both also obviously have now two years plus in the system. They both have taken a major step forward with their defensive production. Then you add to that the fact that I think that the bigs have been, I think they've been benefited recently by having pretty good matchups, pretty manageable matchups for them. And so it'll be interesting to see what happens against a team like Baylor or in some of these other high major games that are coming up, whether it be Utah, Colorado, Wake Forest, et cetera. Whether they can keep that up. But basically what Xavier's been doing is they've just done a really effective job of forcing teams into taking bad shots and cleaning up on the defensive glass when they take them. They annihilated Northern Iowa and North Dakota State pretty much in every way. But on the glass, it was just so lopsided in both of those games, almost to a level that you don't see in major college basketball games that aren't just complete walkovers. So it's been pretty impressive what they've done. Now, let's temper that to a certain extent. These last three games have been against Northern Iowa and North Dakota State. Neither one of these teams, those teams do not have a great deal of athleticism. It's kind of like if you took the caricature of a Bo Ryan Wisconsin team and then just kind of even made it more ridiculous. That's the way these two teams play. So we'll see, because they're about to play a team on Saturday that is not, that does not play basketball that way.
I think you brought up the most interesting part of all this to me, which is the bigs and that their play defensively, because we expected the perimeter players to be pretty good. They're pretty good last year. The guys you mentioned have improved their bodies, improved their conditioning, got a year older, got a year more experienced in the system. And obviously the addition of Malcolm Bernard, I think it was pretty clear quickly after he arrived on campus that he was going to be a help defensively. So that wasn't a surprise to me at all, really. But when you looked at the bigs coming into this season, you had sort of this interesting thing where Jalen and James, what they gave you, especially with Jalen, was the fact that physically you were never going to be overwhelmed. No one was ever really going to be too much bigger or more athletic than Jalen was in the post, right? And that gave you a sense of security of just, well, we're not going to get abused. But what he had was getting lost in the system, not ever fully understanding or fully being able to lock himself in and get in the right spots consistently. And those were his shortcomings. And with James, it was more of just he didn't have good flexibility. He didn't move very well. Laterally, he was very poor. And so those were kind of his shortfallings. What we've seen with this team, this group of bigs, is that it still remains to be seen, and Baylor will get a better feel. Can they hold up when you face the biggest and the most athletic big men? Will they get physically overwhelmed in those matchups? That remains to be seen. But as you pointed out, against these teams where Xavier's athleticism has matched up and they've had favorable matchups, these guys don't miss a beat in terms of knowing where they're supposed to be. And Shannon Russell wrote an article today about how the bigs have performed, and she got a great quote from Mac where he was talking about that the bigs are playing better this year defensively than they were last year, and also mentioned specifically the amount of charges that they've been taking. And that, to me, is a big deal, because when the bigs are getting themselves in position to where they can slide over and take a charge, it's not usually – I mean, there just aren't a lot of opportunities for the bigs where every now and then you maybe get a guard coming downhill off a ball screen or in transition where you're able to just slide over and take it. But more often than not, it's a big recognizing the rotations early, and they're supposed to be in the help spot, and they're getting outside of that charge circle and moving, you know, a good 5 to 6 feet before they're getting in position to take that charge, and they're doing it quickly. They're recognizing and reading it early, which means they understand the system. And that's what you've seen from these big men, specifically Rashid Gaston. I know people have been kind of down on him because he struggled to finish. He also had some weird turnovers in the North Dakota State game the other night. But defensively, he's been very good laterally. They've hedged ball screens great, and he has specifically. And in terms of getting in position and being able to take charges and stuff, that's something we just never saw from last year's big men. And understandably so to an extent, because, look, that wasn't their strength. They were able to block shots and provide length and rebounding at the rim in a way that this year's bigs aren't. But it's still an interesting change, and in a lot of ways, I think that these bigs, what they do and the way they're playing is more conducive to winning and being an efficient defense than last year was for Xavier. But it still comes down to, can you match up in those big-time matchups where you're going to face the biggest, strongest, most athletic big men? Will they be able to rise to that occasion? That remains to be seen, I think.
Yeah, and that's probably the biggest obstacle for this team in terms of what their ceiling is that if they played a team with a lot of size inside, a lot of athletic big men, they could get completely annihilated. And we're not going to see that much this year because there just aren't that many teams that bring that kind of manpower to bear. But if you do envision this team getting to the second weekend of the NCAA tournament and you see them play, and you can name the schools that I'm thinking of, one of those teams that you're going to have to beat to get to a Final Four, it could be hard sledding for the Muskie Bigs.
Of course, and Baylor, I mean, Baylor, honestly, we'll talk more about Baylor when we preview that game, but they're going to give us good idea. I mean, Jonathan Motley and Luol Achiu, or however you say his last name, they're not stiffs. I mean, they can play a little bit, and they're legit size and athletic guys, you know?
Well, I mean, look at what Dang Gu did for North Dakota State.
Right.
He had a fantastic game, I thought. I thought that guy, actually, I watched that guy. I was like, that guy could probably play up a level.
I'll be honest, I was stunned, though, because after watching him on film, it felt like if he wasn't able to get a wide open dunk, he was a walking turnover. Like, nothing he did worked in all the film I saw. He had terrible feel, no IQ, but he was very athletic and had some dunks. And then against Xavier, he looked like a McDonald's All-American. So I'm interested to follow his career going forward, because my guess is there's a reason he's at that level and not a level higher. But certainly on Tuesday night, he looked like the real thing.
But anyway, going back to the North Dakota State game, another thing that came out of that game that I'm really high on with this team is I've noticed, and maybe you can weigh in on whether you think this is just confirmation bias because it's something that I noticed at the beginning of the season, so I think it happens more often than it's actually happening. But it seems like the perimeter players this year have been a lot more active with their hands and have generated a lot more steals and turnovers and transition opportunities by harassing the other team's guards. Now, part of that might be that, again, they played a bunch of teams that aren't very athletic, that have slow guards, that can't really dribble around you, so you can overplay a little bit more. But I do think that there's a pattern forming especially when you have Edmund Sumner and Quentin Gooden on the court at the same time, that they really get into the bodies of the guys they're guarding and make life really difficult. And you add that to the fact that this team is just terrific at finishing in transition. Pretty much all of the main scorers on the team are really just dynamite when they get the ball going downhill toward the basket in a way I don't think any Xavier team I can remember has been.
No, I think that's a really good point, especially the transition baskets. And I had mentioned in my pregame write-up for that North Dakota State game that was something that, despite North Dakota State playing, you know, very patiently and working the ball for good shots on offense, they also weirdly turned it over a lot, which isn't usually a characteristic of a team who plays that style. And I thought that it was something, it's a lot of live ball turnovers, you know, where they're in the middle of their offense and they kind of miscommunicate a perimeter pitch or something and it leads to a run out on the other end. And I wrote that it might be a good opportunity for Xavier to get out and run, and they certainly did. And that game had a lot of different run outs. And you're exactly right, Dan. I mean, not only do they finish well like at the rim, but they're so good at the kicking out threes and swishing those threes in transition. They just love, you know, those guys start salivating when they run out and get to space to the corner or the wing for a kick out. So it's definitely an effective thing. And I think with Gooden, what you've seen from him is he's been really physical on the defensive end. You have to worry about him fouling a little bit, but because of his physical makeup and his athleticism, he's able to be very aggressive when defending and very physical, which I really like what I've seen from him. And also I think Malcolm Bernard has helped that too. You know, you've added a little more length and athleticism there on the perimeter. Not that he's really more athletic than Remy Abel, but he's a little longer. And also you don't have Miles Davis out there ever really. So you're a lot longer and more athletic at his spot too. So I do think they've been doing a good job of being two places at once, digging down, working against the bigs, maybe trying to get some turnovers and speed teams up down in the post, but also recovering to the guards easy and being able to really heat them up when they're on the ball. I think that's been a big part. Dan, something else that I wanted to ask you about that we've seen now in the last two games, Kaiser Gates is back in the action. He only played 11 minutes the first night against Northern Iowa, and then North Dakota State, he played, I'm looking at it right now, he played 14 minutes, so just a couple more. And I was kind of interested by that because, especially in the second half of that game, and really in the first half too, you know, Xavier was in control the entire time. They had plenty of opportunities to work Kaiser into the mix if they would have wanted to. It was kind of interesting to me that Mac didn't try to push him for 20 minutes in that game and really get his wind back and see where Kaiser was at. Did you have any thoughts on how they've used him so far, and then also how he's looked?
I mean, I think it's been appropriate the way they've brought him back, and I think what Mac is really doing is playing the long game. You know, we're not privy to what medical information is out there, whether he's on a pitch count, whether the doctors are saying, you know, this is the ramp up they need to do. And, you know, Chris has always been really good, as Sean was when he was here, about trying to have these guys healthy and fresh at the money time of the season. Right. And so, I mean, yes, it would be better to have, it would obviously be much better for Xavier to have 100% Kaiser Gates or as close to 100% as possible going into this week with two very difficult away games. But by the same token, the team is playing very well as constituted right now. And I don't know. I was surprised too that he didn't get more playing time. But by the same token, I just think this may be one of those things where we just have to accept that we have incomplete information and that Chris had his reasons for doing it the way he did.
Yeah, to me it was more, even more so than the incomplete information, I think to me it was more just a sign of, you know, on the message board it's kind of been a topic of conversation just about both Kaiser and Miles and what their roles are when they step back. And early on when the team, you know, was playing okay, but wasn't perfect, they looked choppy at times or had struggles in certain areas, people were very quick to, oh man, they need Kaiser back. When's Kaiser, like Kaiser was going to step in and play 30 minutes a game and cure all ills for this team. And I kind of mentioned at the time, I don't know that that will be the case. It's a guy who hasn't practiced really at all yet. And while he had some flashes last year as a freshman, it was in a very limited role, and there were very limited instances in which he showed that, hey, that kid looks like he's going to be pretty good. So we don't really know what Kaiser can give this team yet. And I think right now, Chris kind of agrees with that. Like, yeah, they expect him to have a role on this team, and yes, they expect him to get back into the mix here, But clearly they don't think Kizer was a guy that needed to be back in the starting rotation right away or was going to be able to provide that type of production and isn't like the guy that's going to make the difference against Baylor. Like, I think a lot of fans were feeling like, oh man, they need Kizer back for this tough stretch. I don't think that's how the coaching staff looks at it was looking at it. And I think it's very clear that, he's one of the guys, but he's certainly not someone that they feel is a main component right now.
He's obviously way off the pace right now. That was pretty evident. That was obvious against Northern Iowa. He was better against North Dakota State, but you have to consider the level of competition and specifically the level of athleticism and quickness he was playing against, which against North Dakota State was pretty much nil. I think that my record on Kizer Gates is pretty strong. He was one of my bright spots of the season last year. I love his game. I have really high hopes for what he can be at Xavier, but I mean, he was never going to be a 30-minute a game guy this year. I mean, he got more into the mix during conference play last year, but I mean, he was never really a core player for them last year. I thought he would be a rotation guy this year, even if he was 100% healthy.
Yeah.
So
I agree.
If he's not a factor in these next five games, I don't think it makes a huge difference to Xavier one way or the other. The obviously losing Miles Davis is a much bigger blow because you're talking about a fifth-year senior, a guaranteed starter, the third leading scorer on the team last year, the second leading three-point shooter on the team last year, the best foul shooter on the team last year. You lose that guy, that's a big blow. Kizer was, the seventh man on last year's team or the eighth man on last year's team. So, I mean, I think people tend to get excited about the guy that's not there, particularly when the team isn't playing wonderfully, as Xavier wasn't against Lehigh and Missouri, but it's not a huge concern for me. I think that the way the schedule sets up after this week, they're going to have ample time to get him minutes over that four game homestand after they come back from Boulder.
I get what you're saying. I guess it was just interesting to me that they didn't feel like they needed to get him in minutes. You know what I mean? Like they had plenty of opportunities to get him more run and get him back in the flow against North Dakota State, and they opted not to. So I think it kind of tells you a little bit about where they feel like he's at and how important he is to this team's success. And that's not a slight to Kizer at all. It's just, it's just an interesting perspective from the coaching staff. I think the only concern I would have about Kizer right now is he doesn't look to be quite moving like the guy we saw last year. And he's coming off of knee surgery. He hasn't practiced. That's to be expected. I think the bigger concern, though, is he is coming off knee surgery and also added 15 pounds in the offseason. Did he lose a little bit of quickness, which was, the biggest part of his game that everyone was excited about last year, was his defensive quickness. So something to keep an eye on. Certainly not anything to panic about at this point. But, we got to talk about something. So there it is. Any other takeaways from those last two wins, Dan, before we move on to what's just a huge game on Saturday?
Well, Trayvon continues to put up big numbers without really being on point with the 3-point shooting, which I think just demonstrates the versatility in his game. He just looks like a different guy. Like, his stamina is much better. He's a little bit quicker on the first bounce. His step backs are more crisp. He's playing better defense. So he's been really impressive so far this season. And JP, as everyone knows, JP does not give an F, as they say.
He truly does not.
He is not afraid to hoist up shots. And what's been become more and more clear is that his teammates just trust him so much that he does some crazy stuff. Somebody made the comparison to Pete Maravich on the message board. And actually, when you look at some of the crazy scoops he's taking and some of those sort of outlandish passes he tries, that comparison is not 100% off. I mean, granted, he's not going to score 40,000 points in college, but he does some of those things. Like, he is kind of has that flamboyance on the offensive end. And so it's kind of fun to watch him. Like, I think in that game, he may have had, in the North Dakota State game, at one point I looked up, he had 3 assists in the game. I could have sworn he had 7, but all 3 of the ones he had were just spectacular passes. I know he had one feed where he kind of threw a bounce pass past 2 guys to Sumner, who was coming off the wing on a fast break. it just is. So he's been really good. And then the last thing would be the subject of your article today, which was Edmund Sumner's game, which was a really mature, composed sort of game, four general type performance, which is not typically the role you expect out of Edmund Sumner because of his physical gifts. But it was, so it's kind of weird to see him give you a D. Davis performance. But sometimes, if that's what the defense is giving you, that's what you need from him. So I think that was a good sign.
Well, it's like I was explaining to someone last night when I was talking about that exact thing. If it was a close game in the second half, I'd imagine Edmund Sumner would be going to the rim and drawing some fouls. You know what I mean? Like, he'd boost his point total that way. But in this situation, it was like he started off with the focus of clearly trying to be that floor general and get assists. And he didn't play a lot in the first half, which was kind of strange. Once they had the game in hand, he never really felt like he had to get super aggressive, I think. So his mentality certainly played a role in why he only ended up with 5 points. But I think the big takeaway for me with Edmund's play the last two games has been he can err. He clearly hasn't figured out that perfect balance yet of, okay, I'm going to be really aggressive scoring versus I'm going to get my teammates involved and just be a solid point guard. But if he's going to err one way or the other, the team is better off for him erring towards I'm going to get others involved because they have enough other scoring threats, and he's still such a disruptive force even when he's not scoring, just when he's getting into the lane and setting other guys up and creating that movement of the defense, that it's better for him to err on that side of things. So that was kind of my takeaway from Edmund.
So let's talk about the Baylor game real fast. Baylor's had a really impressive start to the season. They kind of started the year with a bang by just crushing an Oregon team that a lot of people were touting as a top five team coming into the season, just crushed them in Waco. And then in their neutral site event, they had a couple big wins as well. They are number 9 in the AP poll this week, and they even got a first place vote in the AP poll this week, which seems premature, but what can you say about Baylor at this point?
So I think the one thing, if you're a Xavier fan, that has to worry you is Baylor has the type of pieces that are necessary to exploit Xavier's weaknesses. I've been kind of mentioning this the past few games in my preview articles that, like, Northern Iowa, North Dakota State just didn't possess, even at the low major level. Like, Lehigh had the things. Those last two teams didn't. And those things, to me, are right now the things that we've seen that definitely give Xavier problems are a point guard that does a really good job of making plays in ball screen situations. I mean, that's just a really nice thing to have anyway, but specifically with Xavier's defense, the way they hedge screens and get out of sorts when they're rotating, and just their personnel on the perimeter, they seem to struggle with guards that are really good off of ball screens, and then big men that you can play through a little bit on the inside, and then potentially, you know, really talented bigs could give this front court a lot of trouble. Last year, that wasn't the case. Now, if you could play through them and you had a big man who had feel and high IQ offensively, that gave them trouble, but they weren't overwhelmed by athletic guys. So we still have some things to see there in terms of how this front court will handle it. But it's definitely, I mean, we saw that in Lehigh, you know, with Tim Kempton. He obviously gave them some trouble, and he was a big man that you could play through, and he knew what he was doing. So those are the two things to kind of watch for, and Baylor has that, in my opinion. Their point guard, Manu LeCompte, was a transfer from Miami, came in with, like, this reputation as kind of a gunner and a shooting combo guard that was just mainly an outside shooter. He's proven now since he's been at Baylor that he's a guy that can run the offense, a capable distributor, and he's really good in ball screen situation. That's where he does most of his work. He's small, like 5'11", 180 pounds probably, but he does a good job of drawing contact and getting to the free throw line, where he's an excellent free throw shooter. So he's not a tremendous, like, assist guy and the highest level playmaker, but he's good, and he's really good in ball screen. So that's certainly something to keep an eye on. And then their best player is a 6'10", 230 big man, Jonathan Motley, who's a junior. He's big, he's athletic, with really good feet and kind of refined moves around the rim. And then he has some face-up skills. He'll catch it at the perimeter, pump fake you and drive you to the rim and dunk on you, because so he can handle it a little bit. He'll step out occasionally and shoot a jumper, but that's not really what he does. He's very difficult to guard one-on-one in the post. He's really active in terms of like when his teammates are driving, he does a good job of moving around and finding the opening if you help, to where his teammates, he's available to his teammates to get him the ball, and he can finish at the rim, obviously, with his athleticism. So, and then at the center spot, they've got a 7-footer who's not an offensive guy, but he's a tip dunk guy, an offensive rebounder guy, a dump off guy. And then he really changes the game around the rim on the defensive end, even when he doesn't block shots, just his length and athleticism, very skinny, but again, very lanky and bouncy. So he's a factor, and we haven't really seen Xavier go against anything like that yet. So I'm really interested to see what he does to Xavier's offense, both their guards when they're penetrating and trying to finish, and then specifically their big men, such as like Rashid Gaston, who's really struggled to finish against length, and Tyreek Jones is a little undersized, and Sean isn't the most athletic. So I think those things could really give X some trouble.
Do you have a sense of which way it's going to go?
I mean, you're playing on the road, and you're playing a team that's playing like a legit top 10 team in the country. They have the things that give you trouble. I think Baylor's the smart bet here to win. I mean, those guys I mentioned aren't all, you know, they have Alaric Freeman, who's their second best scorer, really good downhill driver and their best spot up shooter. Ish Wainwright isn't really a scorer, but he's a very smart and efficient offensive player who passes well, and he's a big bodied, strong, athletic wing. He defends well. The interesting thing, Dan, is they go 2-3 zone and very active. They started out in kind of like a 1-1-3, really put pressure on the ball, and then they move around and kind of morph a lot within that 2-3 zone. The thing I would look for, the reason I have some optimism that Xavier might go here and have a pretty good shot at winning, aside from the fact that, well, they're just a good team, is that in that zone, Chris Mack, obviously, and his staff are really good X's and O's guys on the offensive end. I don't know that Scott Drew is the best X and O guy. Xavier has done some things against zones like this before. I would think specifically back to the 2014-15 crosstown shootout at Cincinnati, where UC, obviously, playing their matchup zone, was even a little more aggressive that year than usual, and was really trying to pressure D. Davis out on the perimeter, and their forwards raised really high out on the wing when they're guarding the ball. And Xavier just ran a simple overload play, and not even really a play, just kind of overloaded one side consistently. And Miles Davis hit 3 threes off of that sort of little action there in the first half of that game and kind of changed things. And UC tried to adjust to it and got a little out of sorts. I could see a very similar game plan working against this 2-3 zone that kind of gets itself out of position, especially in the corners. And Xavier has the shooters. Now, they haven't shot the ball well enough yet, but the one thing you know you're going to get against Baylor is open 3-point looks. And if you get JP or Trayvon or both of those guys going along with a couple of the others, then Xavier's offense can be really difficult to stop after it makes a couple. So it's certainly not a game where you feel terrible about and like, man, this is going to be an impossible game to come away with a victory. But I think the smart money would probably be on Baylor.
Okay. Well, that sounds about right. I mean, I imagine Baylor would probably be like a 4-point favorite in this game. Probably they'll get the home court advantage bump, because I suspect the odds makers will look at these teams and see basically a wash.
I'm really interested to see what that line's going to be, and then like what they expect the pace to be played at, because Baylor, they kind of have this reputation of a team that gets up and down because of their athleticism, but they play very, very slowly on offense. So I'm very interested to see what the over-under comes out at and what the line for the game will be.
Yeah, I mean, and obviously the history for Xavier against Baylor is not particularly great. I just remember Quincy Acey just dunking on the Blue Blob and Chris Mack and his daughters and everyone else in the Xavier traveling party in the Sweet 16 back in, what was that? I think that was the first time we recorded a podcast, was before that game. What was that, 2010, 2009?
Right.
So the last thing that I wanted to hit on real quickly is one of the big stories nationally in college basketball has been the performance of the top teams in the Big East so far. The top four teams, Xavier, Butler, Creighton, and Villanova, obviously, each of them are 7-0 at this point in the season. All four of those teams won an exempt event to get to that point. All four are ranked in the top 20 of the AP, and all four are in the top 20 of the KenPom ratings. And if you break that down a little bit more, all four are really elite offensive teams, and Creighton is elite offensively. Their defenses lag behind a little bit in terms of the efficiency ratings, but the other three have all been elite defensive teams as well so far. The interesting thing is, as I was looking at this earlier today, I took a look at sort of each team's schedule and what they've done so far and how some of their key players were playing. And I think you could make the argument, you could make an argument for any one of these four teams as the most impressive Big East team so far this year. But one interesting thing is that Xavier is the only one of those four teams that has not picked up a signature, what you would consider a signature resume non-conference win so far. Because Villanova obviously beat Purdue away, and then Butler beat Arizona in their exempt event. You had, and then also went on the road to Utah, which is a good win, and Creighton of course beat Wisconsin at home in the Gavitt games, and then beat North Carolina State, who is not great but is a pretty solid team in their exempt event. Whereas Xavier's best win is probably Clemson at this point. And so you look at this Baylor game, and you could, if Xavier could find a way to go out to Waco and get a win, I think they would be you could make a pretty easy argument that Xavier is the most impressive of the four teams thus far this year. I mean, obviously Butler is the big surprise. Creighton has been fantastic offensively. What kind of stands out from those four teams for you so far?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. The Xavier's probably the least impressive in terms of resume right now, but that all changes on Saturday with a win. Villanova is the best of the bunch so far from what I've seen. Like you said, Creighton's weakness is that they don't always commit themselves on the defensive end, but they're not a surprise to me. Like I said this before the year when everyone was saying kind of Xavier and Villanova at the top and then a lot of teams in the middle. I was like, no, I think it's pretty clearly Xavier or Villanova, Xavier, and then Creighton as the top three. And then it gets muddled after that. I mean, Creighton was clearly more talented than the rest of the conference. What I never expected was Butler. Sometimes I'm watching them and I still don't understand why they're there. I love Keelan Martin. He's really good. But the one thing that I have noticed is they're much better defensively this year than they were last year. And I think a lot of that is just because you look at the personnel and you went from playing, Roosevelt Jones was a pretty good defender, but also not the quickest guy or the longest guy. And then you add a Keelan Martin in that
Dunham
lineup.
Played.
And then you have Kellen Dunham, and you're playing Austin Etherington at times. And there was a lot of reasons that team, wasn't quite as good as this team is defensively. But the biggest one is just that difference in personnel. And it's like, it may not have looked like they had totally different personnel coming into this year, especially when you're bringing back Tyler Lewis at point guard. But Kamar Baldwin, the freshman guard, has made a huge difference because now he can guard your best ball. He can guard your best guard, basically, and it doesn't force Tyler Lewis to do that. And it really changes the game because he's an excellent on-ball defender with quick feet. Avery Woodson is playing well at transfer. So there's a lot.
I think Weidman has been pretty good for them as well.
Tyler Weidman
has been an afterthought last season.
He's been better offensively than I ever expected him to be in terms of, like, you can actually throw the ball into him on the block and he can score with his back to the basket now, which I never thought. I thought he'd always kind of just be a garbage man and a tough rebounder and defender, but he's given them a legit option on the block to go with Shrabiz, who I don't okay.
How would you rate the performance of the Polish Hammer so far this year?
I mean, he is what he is. You know, he's one of the weirdest players I've ever watched because I never really like him when I'm watching him. I never really think he's good enough to be like you always feel like you're going to be kind of at a disadvantage at that matchup. But then he has some games and does some things where he can do a lot of different stuff, man. He's a very unique player that not too many guys like him and that I have as conflicted feelings about as him.
Fair enough. Okay, so Musketeers played Baylor on Saturday afternoon, and then we'll be on the road as well next Wednesday playing Colorado at Boulder, a game we initially thought was going to be the tougher of those two games. That did not play out. And then X will be back at home for Utah a week from Saturday.
Quick question.
So, do
you think
was it good?
Do you think Chris Mullen thinks that he accepted an NBA GM position at the college level right now? Like, where all he has to do is acquire better talent and they'll win? He doesn't have to actually, like, coach them?
It's really strange. They've lost five straight games, and the most recent being a home game to Delaware State, which is really, really awful. I mean, that makes JT3's home loss to Arkansas State look tame by comparison. I think a lot of the press and a lot of the national writers thought St. John's would take a pretty significant step forward this year, but as far as I can tell, they are part of that three-team, you know, trail pack. But it seems like, I mean, it seems like DePaul is no better than they were last year. And Providence, obviously, I think Providence remains really well coached, and they've got a couple pretty good players, but they obviously have a pretty significant talent deficit as well. The team that I can't figure out, and it's not going to be any surprise, I get the same feeling from Georgetown this year as I've gotten in the past, which is that the team has enough talent that once or twice this year, they are just going to hammer somebody that they have no business beating based on their resume. And they're going to lose like four or five more games that just make you scratch your head. So it seems like the tiers are shaping up again in the Big East. You've got the top four, then you've got the Seton Hall and Marquette, who may be, who as of right now look like they may have a chance at being NCAA tournament teams, probably Seton Hall with a better chance. You have Georgetown that nobody knows what to expect on any given night, and then you have the bottom three.
Yeah, no, I think that sums it up pretty well. Anything else to top off this podcast, Dan?
No, I think that that we've basically summed it up. We're trying to fill in the podcast cracks.
We lacked a little energy tonight. I feel like we didn't. It was a business. It was a workman's like podcast when you think about it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we're definitely not in mid-season form yet.
No, but lunch pails and hard hats. We were strictly down to business. We just 25-30 minutes in and out.
You might be in mid-season form, but I think, but certainly Snow is complete. Snow is basically in Bengals form at this point, and I haven't hit my heights yet this season.
I would agree with that. Snow's just like not even a part of the podcast anymore. He's like barely exists. So maybe we'll be able to get him
out of the podcast community. Unlike your small business taxation expert Evan Daniels, whose new podcast is actually pretty interesting.
Yeah, not doing
I really enjoyed the. If anybody hasn't heard it yet, go back and listen to his interview with Sean Miller, because that was really interesting. And Sean talked way more about Xavier than you would expect in a podcast interview taped in 2016, and talked a great deal about how he built teams at Xavier, the way that his Arizona teams kind of reflect the sort of values at Xavier. That was really good. I also really liked the one from last week with Dan Marley, who is the coach at Grand Canyon, talking about some of the challenges of building a program at a university that's kind of emerging right now and that's transitioning to Division I. That was a really interesting conversation too.
Yeah, Evan sent me the email about the Sean Miller interview, and I was like, oh, okay. You know, I'm thinking like there's a 30-second clip in here of him saying something about Xavier and trying to move on to the next question. And so I was like, oh, I'll listen to it. He politely sent me the email saying, hey, I don't know if this is something Xavier fans really want to hear about, but he talked about Xavier, so here it is if you want to post it. And I went ahead and listened to it, and like I was shocked at how long they were talking about Xavier for. So yeah, it was pretty interesting stuff from Sean and Evan Daniels. So I think that does it for this edition of the Dan and Victory podcast, only available on musketeerreport.com. For Dan, I'm Rick. Thanks for listening, everyone.